And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. As we get closer to the election, these two subjects dominate the conversation. Each of my guests will discuss either business or politics, or both. My next guest is a medical doctor, a futurist, and an author of The Next 2,000 Days. We'll discuss his prediction of an easy victory for President Obama in the 2012 presidential election and what that victory means for the country and the world. Michael Lennon, MD, is a graduate of UC Berkeley and Ross University School of Medicine. He is a strategic planning and emerging therapies consultant at Chicago Medical Clinics and is a futuring consultant to the medical industry. Michael was invited to a recent Bill Clinton Global Initiative in Chicago. He's the author of The Next 2,000 Days, God and Man in Obama II, joining us from Chicago. Hi, Michael. How are you today?
Fine. How are you doing, Bill?
Well, I'm doing terrific. Thank you for being our guest on the show. Love to have thought leaders who have interesting opinions such as yourself. And you believe that there is absolutely no question who's going to win the 2012 presidential election, and that's going to be President Obama. Now, on the surface, it's shaping up to be the most contentious, best-funded election in U.S. history. Pollsters and political pundits are predicting a very close race, but you don't see it that way. What makes you certain that President Obama will win easily?
Well, it may appear to be rather close, but I think there's like a substantial reserve that will be available to kind of push Obama into the presidency on the election. I don't think we did a very good job of analyzing how Obama came to power to begin with. And as a result of that, a lot of the polls that we're looking at that make it appear like he has the opposition has a chance actually can be somewhat misleading.
All right. Well, how did we miss it when we were analyzing his first campaign, which was a very well-run campaign against John McCain?
Yes, it was. I think one of the things that we failed to underscore is the role of technology that played, particularly things that are popular among the youth. We looked at it in terms of red states, blue states, type of things that are going to make a difference in terms of the electoral voting system that we have, the electoral system. But I think if you look at it, you can see he's got very broad support. Probably the majority of women, students, teachers, youth of all kinds, basically the unions, the press, and Hollywood. That's a big factor. And I think voting for Obama is sort of something that takes, there's a lot of tedium taken out of it as far as voting process is concerned, and there's much less resistance. And the other part of it, of course, is the opposition. I don't think is going to be as appealing, despite the fact that they keep harping on the economy. I don't know if people really are going to be moved by that more than I think the attraction that they have for Obama.
All right. Well, now that's an interesting. There's a lot in that last answer. So let's break it down. First of all, you said social media and young people were a driving force in the 2008 election, and I would have to agree with you that was the case. However, polls are starting to indicate that those who were young and voted for President Obama in the first election have become disenchanted with him in the second election and are either more apathetic in the 2012 election or may in fact vote against President Obama. Now, the use of social media, that was ingenious in 2008, but here in 2012, both sides are using social media pretty effectively. So will social media sort of be a wash between the two parties and in fact present no significant advantage to one or the other candidate?
Not really. And I think the reason for that is there has been innovations between what happened in the 2008 election and what's currently happening here.
Such as?
In terms of media development. Well, I think there's been a lot of more interpersonal connections that have occurred among people. And there's also, I think, the opportunity to kind of create within a very short space a type of voting frenzy that can occur, something that's really not going to be picked up with polls. I don't see any polls that say that youth are actually thinking about voting against Obama. There may be apathy, but as we know, that's not necessarily going to translate to oppositional vote. And I think that when it comes down to it, most people are going to look at Obama as sort of a perch on the future. that if they don't vote for Obama, they're not going forward. And I think that's one of the biggest factors is this Hegelian imperative that I talk about in my book, where if you're not basically voting for Obama, you're kind of heading backwards. And people want to be flowing with the tide of history, and particularly young people. And I don't really see that there would be that apathy would be something very difficult to overcome. I think that the trend that would be developing, particularly if we're looking at women's voting, I think that that rate will actually go up this time compared to what it was last time due to the appointment of Supreme Court justices and women's health imperatives that are coming out now. So I think, by and large, there's going to be more attraction for the Obama presidency than there was before.
Well, that's a very interesting premise. My guest is Michael Lennon, author of the book, The Next 2,000 Days, God and Man in Obama II. And so, Michael, let me ask you, I guess, one overarching question. You're, of course, speaking to us from Chicago, which is President Obama's home base. How much of your perception, how much of your thinking is influenced by the fact that you're right in President Obama's backyard?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's really difficult for me to speak. Actually, one of the people that actually encouraged me to write the book and kind of express the thoughts I had was a very severe Obama supporter, and she felt that probably by putting out the ideas, people would be able to kind of get another perspective. But here in Chicago, most of my friends actually are Obama supporters.
Which, no surprise there.
No surprise there. And I find that, by and large, though, there are some people who you talk to and they say, yeah, they sort of agree with me what I'm talking about. So even though with Chicago's Obama country, highly democratic type of populace, still you'll see there are a lot of people that would like to talk about the opposition and things, the prospects of being in a different type of environment than the Obama administration. And I find that's particularly coming true in view of some of the recent things that have occurred.
Such as?
Well, if you look at one of the things I had predicted in the book was the espousal of this, what they refer to as the a report that was put out by the Planned Parenthood called the Jaffe Memoranda. And in that, there are many things that are actually coming to fruition. And one of them is to do with this promotion of contraception at all levels and also the energy part of it. And as it turns out, you'll see that there's a relationship between the two. The fact that if we can decrease the energy availability, we will also be controlling the amount of reproduction which is taking place in the communities. And along with that comes this benefit of reducing the carbon footprint. Now, this is something that has been on the progressive agenda for quite a long time. And I think that the recent episode in trying to get ubiquitous availability of the contraception is part of that program. Eventually, we'll see that the poster child, I think it's Sandra Fluke was the one who came out with it in Georgetown, the protest.
That's right. She was a Georgetown law student, yes.
Georgetown law student, yeah. I think eventually we'll see her as becoming a poster child for compulsive contraception, to the point where we'll be regulating who is and who is not going to be able to have children. That was part of the Jaffe Memoranda that was put forth to the government by Planned Parenthood Association.
So you're saying that Planned Parenthood has this ulterior motive to control population almost in a Malthusian way to keep the population down or even worse, euthanize people by preventing them from reproducing?
Well, I don't know if I would say euthanasia, but certainly I think if you look at the history of the movement, you can see that the way it started out, they used the word birth control. And the word control in that term didn't really mean a personal type of election. It really referred to compulsion by the government, starting with, I guess, people who were mentally feeble to try to keep them from basically reproducing, becoming a burden to society. And Margaret Sanger actually, quite frankly, spoke about the need to keep down the black population in particular. which is something that many people are unaware of. But it's present in her writings, and they actually changed the name to Planned Parenthood as a result of what was happening under the Third Reich in Germany, where we actually saw the number of people that were actually being eliminated from society under a sort of a guise of classification of getting rid of weeds. So I think that the history of Planned Parenthood, or what it was called then, was the birth control, was something that is very easily documented.
My guest is Michael Lennon. And Michael, just to set the record straight on Planned Parenthood, yes, Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, is controversial, but I'm not sure in the writings that she says anything about a particular race or ethnicity. She's merely talking about poor people in general. So let's put that aside, and I want to bring the conversation back, if we can, to President Obama's reelectability in this upcoming campaign. You listed a number of reasons why he will become reelected. It's almost a slam dunk. However, there's still the looming economy. I mean, Professor Neil Ferguson wrote in Newsweek, and Newsweek is hardly a conservative publication, that President Obama should go based on his record. How will President Obama convince voters to look beyond his paltry record on the economy and reelect him?
Well, we see how that's working very easily. The simple thing is to blame it on Bush. You just look at the fact that he took over and it's been touted as being the worst depression in American history and something that we were never able to scope out the depth of the problems. And maybe it's going to take decades before we actually see a resolution. And I think that's a pretty easy sell to the American people.
So blaming President Bush, who has been out of office now for 4 years, is the strategy that the Obama administration is going to pursue, and that's going to hoodwink the American voters into making believe that this will all go away in his second term?
Yeah, I think it is pretty effective. If you talk to people, they will mention the fact that they've been out of work, and they've been out of work since the time when Bush was in office. And they feel that at the current time, this is just like a spillover, and it's going to take a while in order for it to be corrected. And if you look at the Congressional Budget Office for their projections, they actually had the unemployment rate be sustained clearly up into about 2013, 2014.
Well, the CBO, as an independent office, probably did, but President Obama's own budget was talking about unemployment rates at 6% by the end of his first term. In fact, President Obama said in an NBC interview that if unemployment wasn't at 6% at the end of his first term, and I'm quoting here, well, we'll have to see about a second term. So he had high hopes that he could get the unemployment down, but an unemployment has been lingering around 8.2% throughout his entire term. And as far as making new jobs, creating new jobs, precious little has been done to help in that area. Why would Americans believe that another 4 years of the same thing would yield greater job increases?
Well, the story behind that is very simple. He did make that prediction about 6%, but that was before, and I think it's pretty much the way he phrased it, that's before anybody really realized the extent of the problem that the economy was in.
Well, let me stop you right there, Michael, because if that's the case, wasn't President Obama naive and didn't understand the situation that he was himself in, and did he then not misspeak on NBC?
Well, yes, but perhaps he was misrepresented to him as it was the rest of the American people.
So the people surrounding him weren't giving him the facts, weren't giving him the real situation?
Well, the idea is that nobody knew. That's the explanation.
Nobody knew.
Nobody had
But you said the CBO knew because the CBO had
the
unemployment
projections that were based on when Obama took office. But what Obama is saying, what that administration is saying, is that they did not realize the depth of the problems that had occurred as a result of the previous administration.
All right, so blame and shame is the strategy going forward.
Yeah.
My guest is Michael Lennon, author of the book, The Next 2,000 Days, God and Man in Obama II. And in your book, you also make another bold assertion, Michael, about the future of presidential elections in general. You predict that there will be no presidential election in 2016. Now, that's frightening to me on many levels. So how and why would the United States reject its own 235-year tradition of presidential elections every 4 years?
Well, we've already seen a lot of rejection of traditions over the last several decades. If you take a look at, for example, the Bush administration, we actually had these laws that were passed that allowed the Census Bureau to do intrusions into the families to get data, including things like asking questions about guns in the home and stuff like that, which are clearly not under the purview of the Constitution. So there's been serious inroads to the problems of even the recent activity by Obama in terms of the making a decision regarding the illegal immigration, which is, of course, a solution to a problem, but it's clearly not constitutional. And so I think people are becoming more and more accepting of this phrase that we associate with Al Gore, where he talks about the Constitution being a living, breathing document, meaning there's no absolute guarantees in there. And so I think that people are going to become more and more accepting. The other thing to keep in mind is that, first of all, you have the administration that is going to be trying to deal with problems, and people are going to feel that if we're going to be moving in the direction of making changes in administration, we're not going to be effective at dealing with problems, things like the economy and stuff like that. So I think that there's going to be a move to kind of make things more efficient, do away with a lot of the so-called blockades that are taking place in congressional action, congressional activity. And I think people may be attuned to that, especially if they feel there's a problem at hand that needs solution. So I don't really see that as being the traditions really stepping in the way of a referendum that would give power in 2016.
A very frightening prospect, Michael, because what you're painting is a scenario of Germany in 1933 when Hitler came to power, when it was a democracy, and slowly, over a period of just 3 years, turned it from a democracy into a dictatorship. And unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Michael Lennon, author of the book, The Next 2,000 Days, God and Man in Obama II. Michael, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. They want to learn more about you, learn more about the book. Where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Let's see. We don't have an internet site available today, but they could basically email me if they want to at BachUniversityPress@yahoo.com.
BachUniversityPress@yahoo.com. Michael, it has been a delight. Thank you for being my special guest here on the Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bill.